This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Thursday, the 24th of May. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Dean Arcuri. Tonight on the show, we discuss how this week Australia has become one step closer to true marriage equality, with the news that Victoria has become the third state in Australia to scrap forced trans divorce for same-sex married couples where one of the individuals is transgender. We find out about the Rainbow Family Youth Advisory Council with Rainbow Families. And we speak to some of our Joy volunteers to find out why they do what they do on National Volunteer Week.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
We are literally one step closer to marriage equality, with the news this week that Victoria has become the third state in Australia to scrap forced trans divorce. Wait, didn't we get marriage equality last year? You know, we talked about same-sex marriage. Isn't that when it happened? Let me break it down for you. January 8th, 2018 was the day that same-sex marriage officially became legal in Australia and saw many same-sex couples tie the knot or even just wake up the next morning to find their marriage vows, which they'd taken in another country, were finally recognised as legal. It was a huge day of celebration because we finally had marriage equality. But did we? For same-sex couples where one of the members was transgender, this wasn't the case. But wait, even if one of the individuals in the couple was trans, but both people in the relationship were the same gender now, they're the same sex. So a change to same-sex marriage should allow them to tie the knot, right? Unfortunately, it wasn't the marriage paperwork that was causing the problem. It was actually the birth certificates. You see, if a trans person was in a loving married relationship and their birth certificate didn't identify their correct gender, the only way in which they could get that changed was to get a divorce. It's enough to make your head spin. Well, soon in Victoria and New South Wales, this won't be a problem. After this week's announcements and passing of legislation, which allows married people to correct the sex on their birth certificate in Victoria, with similar legislation lodged in New South Wales on Wednesday. To break down what this means around the nation on both a legal and personal level, I'm joined now by Lee Carney, a lawyer at the Human Rights Law Centre, and Sarah Addock from New South Wales, a transgender woman who's in a loving marriage that then became a same-sex marriage after her transition and is waiting for a change in legislation so that her marriage to her wife can finally be recognised. Lee? So we've got a bill that was passed on Tuesday in Victoria, a bill in New South Wales that's in Parliament today, a bill in Queensland that's still before Parliament, and South Australia and the ACT. What's the situation there?
The South Australia and the ACT already removed the unmarried requirement, what's usually called in the community the forced trans divorce requirement, from their birth certificate laws before marriage equality came into effect. So South Australia and the ACT are fine, which just leaves Tasmania and WA. They've both made commitments, but there's also potentially broader reforms that could happen in those states, which is very exciting. And the Northern Territory as well has made a public commitment to address this, but it's unclear. A lot of the MPs and parliamentarians are keen on progressing this, I think, progressing broader birth certificate reforms, but we haven't seen anything yet.
This is creating a scenario where trans couples that are currently married now won't have to go through the process of having to divorce, whether that be costly or lie about what that means, in order to have the trans member of that couple have their birth certificate reflect their correct gender.
That's correct.
So what exactly is the bill that got put forward in Victoria?
In Victoria, it was part of an access to justice bill, and all that did was make a simple amendment to our birth certificate law in Victoria to remove that requirement that a person be unmarried. And it's been really welcomed by so many trans and gender diverse advocates who know people or who are in this situation where they were looking at having to divorce the person they love or being able to affirm their gender in a legal sense.
What about the bills that are in New South Wales currently and the one in Queensland? Are they of this similar kind?
They're very similar. They do the same thing. The New South Wales law is slightly different in that it's a bit broader in its effect. It essentially amends a whole range of other laws where the language needs to be changed to reflect the fact that now you can get married, two people can be married regardless of your gender. So references to, you know, husband or wife would now include gender-neutral term as well, and making sure that all of those other acts are amended, which is really positive news as well.
So this is fantastic for what it means for any transgender people who are married. You know, it really does make a big difference to just the validity that exists within that marriage and their lives.
It does. I mean, last year, Australians overwhelmingly voted yes for marriage equality, but there's still these leftover laws that need to do more to before we have full equality for trans and gender diverse Victorians and people from New South Wales, and again, all the other states and territories where it hasn't come into effect. And I should say that even though this is a really positive step forward, trans and gender diverse advocates are strongly advocating for more legal barriers to them being able to affirm their gender in a legal sense, for these barriers to be removed, things like surgery requirements, being only able to be recognised in terms of binary gender, this very, very difficult process if you're under 18, and the requirement for medical evidence to prove that your identity is what you say it is and what you should know better than anyone else, including a doctor.
You're on The Informer on Joy 94.9 with Lee Carney and Sarah Addock. Now, Sarah, yep. You and your wife married in New South Wales in 2008?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then you transitioned from male to female in 2012.
Well, that was when I came out, I suppose, publicly and, yeah, legally transitioned, yes.
That meant, you know, changing all of your documentation, but there wasn't everything that you could change, was there?
That's right, yeah. It sort of starts off a long and arduous journey of changing your details, dealing with bureaucracy, but I was able to change to a passport without any trouble at all. It was perfectly straightforward. So my passport reads female and my name, but my birth certificate, on the other hand, it's a whole other story.
So your birth certificate still registered you as male?
That's correct. So I was able to change my name. That was fine, straightforward enough, but the gender marker was unable to be changed because we remained married.
This leads to a lot of ridiculousness for many trans people who are in happily married relationships, because this scenario meant the only way you could get your gender changed on your birth certificate was to divorce.
That's right. So it's Kafkaesque is how I describe it. It's the perfect bureaucratic nightmare of being put in a position where either you carry on with inconsistent identity documents issued from Australian state governments or within the One Nation, or you present yourself to court, perjure yourself and say there's an irreconcilable difference and tear up your marriage certificate.
Now, that wasn't actually something that you or your wife wanted to do, is it?
No, that's right. Look, and I mean, I was pretty active in the marriage equality debate. I felt reasonably strongly about it and put a fair bit of energy into it. And my view, though, has always been that marriage is something you should enter into because you want to, and we wanted to. We felt, like a lot of rites of passage, I guess, in communities, there are certain symbolic moments, certain things that you can point to and say, well, that kind of summed up where we were up to and what we wanted to do with the rest of our lives. And for us, marriage, that the act of getting married and the certificate was symbolic of how we felt about each other and where we want to take our lives, and still do to this day. We were not willing to give that up.
Was seeing everyone cheering for marriage equality a bit frustrating because a lot of people didn't realise that we didn't really have it yet?
Yeah, look, yes, I think that's right. It was look, no, it wasn't. I was pretty happy and moved to tears when it happened, to be really honest. I mean, you know, I've got a lot of friends who are gay and I'm in a same-sex relationship. Lots of my friends are gay. We were all caught up in this, so I didn't feel frustrated. There was as much as just feeling like, well, we've still got work to do. And I guess what I did feel that perhaps was not so positive is I really hope people kind of stick with this fight. Where, you know, it's not over yet.
It does also highlight the reality for many trans or gender diverse people, or people who identify outside of the binary, that forms and documentation and these little things, because as you said, you are in a same-sex relationship, you're in a same-sex marriage, so you were living that, and same-sex marriage should have been something that was awarded to you on the same day it was awarded to every other married same-sex couple in Australia. But because of a tick on a box that couldn't be changed, that meant this wasn't the case. And we've still got a lot of work to do to make sure that we have full document equality for those people within our communities who need it, because that's a validation of who they are.
Well, that's right. And there's still barriers for this yet. We've removed one barrier, and this is where, you know, the people of Australia have voted for marriage equality. They've voted for equality, and the people of Australia are ahead of our governments at the state and federal level. So it's still requiring people to have invasive surgeries in order to change their birth certificates, hormonal treatments and other medical diagnostic processes to take place. It's not because they care. It's because for some unknown reason, the bureaucracy has got its nose in our private lives. And I think there's a line. It seems absurd to me that in this, you know, age of liberalness, liberality, our liberal society, we seem to be fine with the state saying, well, this is who you are, and in order to change, you've got to jump through a whole bunch of hoops at your own cost, whether you want to or not, in order to change something that's actually just fundamentally about who you are as a human being.
Sarah, you're absolutely right. You're on The Informer on Joy 94.9. Now, Lee, in Victoria, when the trans community did try to make changes so that their birth certificates could accurately reflect the gender that they are, there was a lot of opposition to that. Has tackling marriage equality and dealing with the postal survey helped to grease the wheels, make the conversation better, or helped us to find spaces in other laws where it really does break the conversation down to equality so that these changes can be made?
Does when this law failed. It was at the end of 2016 that there had just been a year of the vicious public debate about safe schools, and now we're in a very different political space where we know now that Australians resoundingly support marriage equality, and so we might be able to get some more support and some more political recognition that really our laws are behind what our community expects, and Australians want us to have fair and inclusive laws, and it's time for our politicians to catch up.
It's also important for everyone to understand what it means in relation to equality. At least now we are in a space where we can really celebrate nearly Australia-wide there being marriage equality for all. But this still doesn't mean that we're in the right space we need to be to when it comes to trans people and birth certificates in Australia, does it?
And that's true. Even if forced trans divorce requirement is removed, there are still other legal barriers to trans and gender diverse people being recognised for who they are. And so there's still so much more that needs to be done. And in fairness, the Victorian bill would have addressed all of those issues. But because it failed, it was unfortunately knocked down in the upper house by the crossbench, and the Liberal Party who voted against it, we're unable to essentially bring that bill forward again to be decided before the next election. But it's definitely something that leading up into the next election, we hope that all LGBTI advocates would be calling for. It's unacceptable that some trans and gender diverse people are still waiting for full marriage equality. The community has shown their support for marriage equality. It's time our laws did as well.
Well, Sarah, this passing of this bill in Victoria now means that you will be legally married in New South Wales.
Yeah, that's right. For us, it's kind of exciting. Just to be clear, we were unwilling to rip up our marriage to it. So we are married, yet in a same-sex marriage. So we're in that strange netherworld. This sorts that out. So it's kind of nice, I guess, in a way, that by a 10-year anniversary of our marriage, I'll be able to change the gender marker on my birth certificate and remain married.
That's absolutely wonderful. Congratulations.
To all LGBTIQ people out there and our allies, that marriage is one thing and it was important. Like I said, I was a passionate advocate for marriage equality. this reform is important. There are more forms regarding birth certificates and the Birth, Death and Marriages Act that need to be rectified, but there are other things we need to keep fighting for, and it's not over yet. We've still got work to do in our community and actually to extend to other communities overseas in particular who are not so fortunate. So let's keep fighting the good fight.
Lee Carney from the Human Rights Law Centre and Sarah Addock, thank you for joining me on The Informer.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
The first meeting of the Rainbow Families Youth Advisory Council took place in New South Wales. What is the Rainbow Family Youth Advisory Council, I hear you say? Let's chat with Vanessa, co-chair of Rainbow Families, and while we're at it, why don't we hear straight from the kids themselves as well?
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
Patrick, today was the first meeting of the Rainbow Families Youth Advisory Council.
My name's Jules, and the Youth Advisory Council is for young people in the Rainbow Families community who want to have a voice.
Hi, my name's Jessie, and our first item on the agenda is to write a book for kids who are now in similar circumstances who may have parents who are trans, gay or lesbian.
Hi, I'm Jess. We will be meeting every Friday for a pizza night every month.
Hi, I'm Amali, and everybody that has a Rainbow Family is invited.
Okay, Rainbow Families Youth Advisory Council. Co-chair from Rainbow Families, Vanessa, is on the line. Vanessa, how did this come about?
It's been an organic thing. I mean, you remember last year during the plebiscite and the postal vote, there was just so many kids and young people in our community as well who kind of emerged as leaders. We're doing things in their school and, you know, we're wanting to speak up and do something. And I think as an organisation, we realised that we're a group that supports the community, including kids, and we just were not really hearing them or involving them in decision making about things that we were running or advocacies that we were doing. And so we thought we needed to change that.
How easy was it to create a space for this to happen?
It's been fairly easy. I think you just have to do it. What we did is we called out, we put in an expression of interest during Family Pride, which is a big event that happens in Sydney. And we had a flyer and we had some kids in our community put out information about. And I've been inundated with surprisingly really even really young kids who want to be part of the Youth Advisory Council. You just have to hold a meeting and kids and young people will come.
Kids are the first thing, especially in the past 2 years, that have been put at the forefront of protect the children. What does this mean for children? Children shouldn't be like this, or children shouldn't think gender is this, and all that different stuff. But when it comes to something as simple as Rainbow Families and what that means, we often forget that the kids are right alongside us in everything that we do. And the passion that we have for advocacy is not something that they see as any different to living their life every single day, because it's their lives as well. So
it's totally their lives as well. And I think, you know, many have emerged as being beautiful, strong advocates, very passionate, and also like great community builders. And they want to, you know, they kind of want to have a voice about a lot of things. And not only do they want to have a voice, I think they also kind of want to create community and want to bring other kids together. They're concerned about, you know, kids in rural or remote areas that don't know other kids, and some have had experiences of that. And, you know, they're also like have a lot of heart about things.
It creates an exciting space for us to, instead of thinking of the children, have an opportunity to listen to them. Watching that video that's on your Facebook page, which is so great, and it's just the kids introducing themselves at the first meeting that occurred, and this is the platform that we want to talk about, and this is who we are, and this is what we want to do. And it's really wonderful seeing that from children and realising they have a strength and voice of their own that deserves to be heard.
Absolutely. And we've only had one meeting, and they just have tons of ideas and tons of things they want to achieve. So I think we'll just have to keep up with them. They would like to do a resource for other young people. They're very interested in doing videos for remote kids. You know, and when we asked how often they wanted to meet as a group, they said they wanted to meet every week, which we said in adult land, we don't meet that often.
Well, the adults are the ones that are going to have to drive them around as well and to take them everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I could see, you know, the parents that were in the room going, oh, that's a huge commitment. And there's children, young people from far and wide coming to the meeting. But it doesn't stop us creating other social support or connection, and that's what we decided. So we're going to meet every month. they said. And look, the first step for us is to offer them some training and some support around that. And we expect them to lead their own group and then be able to make recommendations and advice that will go to the management committee. But they will be self-led and self-directed and will be able to have their own projects and ideas. And we made a commitment to help them fundraise or provide some funds as well centrally, so that some of the things that we're listening to, we're sort of putting into action, making sure that things they care about that can actually happen.
If a young person wanted to be a part of the Youth Advisory Council or wanted to get involved or just wanted to know what's going on, how could they reach out?
So they could contact Rainbow Families in New South Wales and they could look up our website or send us an email at info@rainbowfamilies.com.au. So if they send us an email, we can send them a lot of information. There's actually a young person in the committee. He's 12. He's been nominated as a new members person and he's someone that will make contact directly with a young person and explain the committee. So we've already got someone nominated to do all that welcoming and trying and offering information about the group to new kids that want to join. I've been really surprised by how young some of them are. So there's a lot of 11-year-olds, which surprised me so much, putting their hands up. So there's a real age range, but such young, beautiful leaders as well.
It's just wonderful to see this kind of strength and advocacy come from young people. But I think what's really important is come from young people who are a part of Rainbow Families. It's really important now. We've made certain steps in marriage equality. We're getting there in regards to a lot of laws for trans and gender diverse people. But it is really important that we realise that Rainbow Families aren't a new thing. They've been around for years and they deserve as much strength and space as the rest of us.
Yeah, absolutely. So you'll be hearing lots of beautiful things from our young people in the months to come.
Oh, we can't wait. Vanessa, co-chair of Rainbow Families, thanks for joining us on The Informer. And you can find out more information or get in touch with Rainbow Families Youth Advisory Council by heading to rainbowfamilies.com.au.
Bye.
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 See ya.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
This week is National Volunteer Week, an annual celebration to acknowledge the generous contribution of our nation's volunteers. Here at Joy, we have over 300 volunteers, both on the mics and behind the scenes, helping to keep us out loud and proud. And we've been featuring some of these volleys at the beginning of each ep of The Informer this week. We loved hearing from them so much that we thought, why not bring you a little bit more? So here are some of the diverse volunteers at Joy. We asked them why they give their time to the station and to the community.
My mum and dad both came out as being gay later on in life. My dad came out as being gay in early 2000 and my mum came out a couple of years later. But both of them live in countries where it's illegal to be homosexual. So coming from Zimbabwe, it's illegal there. And my mum lives in Dubai where it's obviously illegal there. So when I first moved to Melbourne, I found I had a radio background anyway, but I chose Joy as my place to volunteer because I felt like it was incredibly important in my own life to support the LGBTI community as a straight ally. And I felt like my parents deserved that.
I can only speak from my personal experience. Like, for me, I volunteer because it's a way for me to heal. You know, it helps when I can actually, you know, I use the pain I still carry from my past to serve a greater good, and it actually helps me to heal a lot faster. And at the same time, you know, I think we have come to the point of our history that we should have more forces. And you know, like how there are like limited fundings pouring into this very community, so you know, we do need like the extra labor, I suppose, you know, through the volunteer gateway. And it's just to push the whole human rights agenda forward.
I've been around for about 20 years.
That's
and
a long...
it just feels like a couple of months only.
That's a long time to be a volunteer.
Well, I want to volunteer here because, first of all, it's been one of my greatest desire to be able to give the minorities a voice. And secondly, I just love the vibe here. Like, it's full of glitter, it's full of unicorns and mermaids.
Joy actually has given me the opportunity of finding out where my talents or my specialities lie. And then there's the admin situation, which IT and me don't mix very well. But so many people here at Joy have got a lot of patience in showing me how to work things and, yeah, when things go wrong, blah, blah, and all that.
So I started off volunteering on Drive with Jono, and then I became Summer of Joy coordinator. So I had kind of paid gigs, but I was always doing additional voluntary stuff on the top of it because Joy is important and it's one of those organisations that you need to be a volunteer for.
I think Joy has done a tremendous work when it comes to supporting the queer community, you know, giving our very own community a space within the society, especially in the Melbourneian metro area.
Being a friend within a family, I think there's the opportunity to be connecting with people, connecting with our community, helping others. It's just giving back. We give a little and we get so much more back in return.
I'm a mature age, well and truly a mature age person. So radio, not TV, was my genre of growing up. So radio, and as being a single child from a working family, look, radio has been my comfort, my joy. And there we go. Look who I'm ending up with in my older age at Joy. So it's about radio. And I thought that I might be able to give some sort of service to Joy, because I also had worked with the PLWHA and in awful times in the 80s and the Alfred Hospital and VAC on reception there for about 4 years and so on. So it's my family. It's my family in many areas of our community, and it's just another way of giving back and saying thank you, yeah, for giving me so much.
It was my opportunity and my way of being able to return something to the gay community. I was fairly closeted in my earliest life, and this was a chance of being public, yet still discreet.
Joy is like a family, and I feel that being a volunteer at Joy gives me something in my life that I was lacking everywhere else. Because you come in and there's this amazing positivity and this unified drive for the greater good. And because we're doing such amazing work for the LGBTI community, and we are the mouthpiece and the platform for the community in Australia, but then also in the world, I feel like you're volunteering for something really worthwhile. And so for purely selfish reasons, it gives me great joy to be a part of Joy.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. And a shout out to all our volunteers who help make this show happen. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Dean Arcuri.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.